White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Ladies and gentlemen, and students of the International Jew, thank you for joining me for the final chapter tonight. It is February 20th, 2014 tonight, and yes, tonight is the final chapter 80, episode 85, which means that it's been 85 weeks since we began reading this extraordinary book, or maybe I should call it a collection of articles, written from 1920 to 1922. We began with Chapter 1 on June 28, 2012, which is a rather auspicious day, and it's fitting because this has been a terrific run for this International Jew program, and it's taken well over a year and a half to complete it. We only missed 1 week. That was during last Thanksgiving week, last Thanksgiving Thursday. But it was actually about 1¾ years, I'd say. It's too far away from the 2 years to call it almost 2 years. But it's gone fast. I mean, it's been fascinating all along. I'm totally captured by this book that Henry Ford is responsible for, ultimately. And I'm here by myself tonight. Hadding is indisposed, so I will be finishing it up tonight myself. And I am Carolyn Yeager, and I am happy to be here with you. I have been studying up on some of the questions that have been asked about Henry Ford's so-called retraction and the stopping of the project, and how all that went, and what's true and what isn't true about it. So I will be coming back next week to discuss that, because I've accumulated a lot of interesting information, and I think I really want to talk about it. I'm more geared up about this book now at the end than I even was at the beginning. And I think it has so much to offer us, and including, if I might say, with the protocols too, and everything that came together at this time, in the United States. And this last chapter, I think, is an excellent summing up. It explains a lot, as a matter of fact, about Christian identity in a way that simplifies it for me. In fact, I don't know why I never understood what it's saying here tonight. It's so which gives me a good idea of it, which I never really had. So it goes into a number of things, trying to do because I think they knew that this was the last chapter for a while, but then it never did pick up again because of all the legal troubles and so on. But I think it does as good a job as it could in trying to look to the future from this point. So we're going to see how that works out. So I will just begin, and I hope I can do a proper job of it. This is chapter 80, and it starts with a quote from Lazare, and it is, "Everywhere they wanted to remain Jews, and everywhere they were granted the privilege of establishing a state within a state. By virtue of these privileges and exemptions and immunity from taxes, they would soon rise above the general condition of the citizens of the municipalities where they resided. They had better opportunities for trade and accumulation of wealth, whereby they excited jealousy and hatred." So said Lazare, who is obviously Jewish, a Jewish name. but I don't know where that's from. All right, chapter 80, an address to Gentiles on the Jewish problem. And Gentiles is in quotes, because as they're going to, as the excellent writer for these articles, William Cameron, I think he's done just a fantastic job. And there's things I want to say about him, too. Looks like Hadding got over his indisposition and has just joined the program. So let me get back to my White Network page. Here it is. Hi, Hadding.
Hello.
Hi. Well, I just started reading. I didn't start yet. I was just going to start. So I was just saying that William Cameron put Gentiles in quotes here in the title of this chapter, because he explained right in the beginning why that is, and I think that's also excellent. I was just praising this chapter. So why don't you go ahead and read it then?
Well, I'm scrolling to the page now.
Okay. Okay, I was telling the listeners that we're going to do, or at least I intend to do, and maybe we'll both do, a program next week talking about giving some information about, Henry Ford's troubles and what Henry Ford's personality was really like. And a lot of things, I've been doing, reading up on a lot of things, and I'm all enthused about talking about it, so I have a lot of information.
Okay.
For next week. Okay.
Well, my internet connection went out for a while. That's why.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway.
Okay.
So here we are. International Jew. Starts with a quote from Bernard Lazare.
Okay, I read that already.
Oh, you read that?
Yeah,
from the French Jew.
Yeah, right.
The Dreyfusard. All right. International Jew, chapter 80. An address to Gentiles on the Jewish problem. The heading of this article presents difficulties. The correct use of the term Gentile is in question. It is a name that has been given us, not by ourselves, but by Jews, and it is by no means certain that it is accurately given. A very great chance exists that it is not. That, however, is a matter which Gentiles do not bother to understand. They think, of course, that if one is not a Jew, one must be a Gentile. That is only another instance of the Jewish view being put over without the Gentile understanding or even questioning it. There is another difficulty. How shall one address Gentiles collectively? When one addresses Jews, he knows that the Jew is always a Jew, that every Jew acknowledges every other Jew, that Jews understand each other and are loyal to each other as against outsiders, that they think together and act together, that they stand together for Jewish defense, no matter how just the charge brought against them. When you address Jews, you address a unit, and when you discuss Jews, you get a united reaction from them. This cannot be said of Gentiles. They are of many races, many nationalities, many religions, many tongues. They never think of themselves as being united under the name Gentiles. They are not race or class conscious. Certainly, they do not think of themselves as a unit with reference to the Jews as an opposite unit. Gentiles cannot be organized into one group nationally, let alone internationally, as Jews can. Of course, every state of opinion, of every degree of religion and of unreligion, can unite all around the world, and do unite, having their own news service, their own telegraph service, their own foreign department, as they themselves describe it, by which they keep themselves united and informed for mass action. There is nothing even remotely approaching that among Gentiles.
You know, it seems to me what they're saying here, what it says to me is that the word Gentile has no meaning. But we've been given that word by Jews.
Yeah.
And we have adopted it, and I use it because I don't know how, you know, it's used so many places. And so when you want to not say Jew, you say Gentile, but I've always resented that word.
Yeah, the category Gentile only makes sense in terms of distinction from the Jew. That's the only any sense.
Right, right. And so I'm really glad he's writing about this way.
Not that this fact can be urged against the Gentiles as a fault. There are reasons why the Gentiles never can be united. And one reason is that among the so-called Gentiles, there is a regnant superior strain that is not Gentile at all. No more is it Jewish. There are racial and moral strains among the non-Jewish section of the world, which never can be brought into agreement. And outside this superior strain, among the Gentiles proper, the very basis for enduring union is lacking. So that the only union that can be expected is a union of the superior strain, physically and morally, is unconquerable, and whose task it is to liberate the lesser peoples who easily fall victims to subversion and have no reactive power to rescue themselves. It's almost as if he were talking already specifically about the Germans.
Yeah, but I thought that was very good too. Anyway.
It is to this human Gulf Stream that flows through the ocean of humanity, blessing it, that this address is offered.
You know, I think he's actually talking about the Anglo-Saxons, not the Germans.
Perhaps.
It'll sound like that to you and to some people, but he's really talking about the Anglo-Saxons. By which he means European people, but probably doesn't include too many on the out.
Perhaps you could say that. Germanic people.
The what?
Germanic.
Yeah.
Which includes English. To the identity of this section of humanity, he that hath ears to hear, let him hear. The others will not, because they cannot. There are many genuine Gentiles mixed up in our common population. But it is not to them that these words are offered. The Jewish question has existed for a long time, as the Jew knows and admits, and is a consequence of certain un-Jewish, or rather un-Israelitish, ideas held by Jewish persons of power. The disability under which the Jew labors is that he is not a Jew, properly speaking, and not desire to be. Just at that point is the soil and the root of the Jewish question. This sounds like the John Gospel, those who call themselves Jews but are not, something like that. Tackling the Jewish question is not a congenial work. The race which this article now addresses has always shrunk from tackling it. Our race has little disposition to chastise any portion of humanity, to arouse feeling or to resist it. We have little taste for this surgical work, which becomes absolutely necessary when certain corrupt influences deeply dislocate and seriously injure the common life. Nothing but a clear vision of the danger, nothing but an imperative sense of duty, would impel any one of us to embark on a course which is subject to misunderstanding, and which must, in the nature of things, wait long for its complete justification. Our race is too fair, and has always been too fair, to enter hastily into judgment. And upon this fairness and long-suffering, the offending groups have often seriously trespassed.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting that I know he means by fair, he means, being, even-handed. But also, he's talking about the race, and I think that he's talking about the white race. We could call it that, the white race. And it is also fair in the sense of, you know, light-colored. So, what do you think he means by race here?
As far as fairness goes, there are different things he could mean by that. One that he could mean is our tendency to judge people only as individuals and not hold it against a group, that they have a large number of individuals.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. Yeah, I mean, that's what I meant, all that, without going through it all. But that, to be even-handed with everyone and everything, right? So, but also, what race do you think he's talking about? Would you say white race, the white race, or something even more special?
He probably is thinking of Northern Europeans.
Well, I don't know if he thinks only about Northern Europeans, but we don't know. We don't know, but he probably prefers that. I think Henry Ford did, but
regarded by itself. As a separate entity, the Jewish power is most impressive. International Jews today occupy literally every controlling lever of power, building up for centuries, perfecting their teamwork from generation to generation, from country to country. They have practically reached the summit. Nothing but the Christian religion remains unvanquished by them. Though through false liberalism, even that has felt the Jewish assault.
Now, I think this is really interesting, because as he says, they've practically reached the summit, and I would say they are now at or on the summit, and they have, therefore, they have nowhere to go but down. I don't see how they can go up any further. And then the Christian religion, he's saying that the Christian religion is what is holding them from taking over altogether. But now they have vanquished the Christian religion for the most part. Certainly the Catholic religion, the Vatican, and almost all. So I think, though, that that's right, that it was the Christian religion that resisted the Jews for the longest. Now I'm done.
Well, there was a problem with the Christian religion in that it was pretty easily subverted. There were a lot of Jews became Christian clergymen.
It was, but not so easily. But I mean, I think that's what he's saying, and I think it's basically true. Basically.
And I think the Jews are already past the peak of their power. They're already on the way down. Because people recognize their power now, and they're reacting to it.
Well, that's what they're saying in here. That's what they're going to be saying, that sort of, but they're still thinking that they're, almost 100 years ago, so we'll see.
So great is this power that the very knowledge of it kills hope that any movement can ever dislodge it. Honest men have walked round it, surveyed it, measured its strength, and have given up the dream of changing it. In Russia, they tried to segregate it. But while segregation went on from one side, infiltration proceeded from the other. And even the anti-Semitic Russian government was honeycombed with Jews, as the end showed. In Germany, they endeavored to vote the Jewish power out of politics, only to find the root deep set in finance. And no country has yet attacked the sacred image of gold. In England, the policy of absorption was adopted, and the result is that wherever a Jew was put in power, the British Empire has reaped trouble. In Ireland, in India, in Palestine, the present vice-regents of all these possessions being Jews. Other little countries, exasperated beyond endurance, tried violence and failed just as miserably as the others. Why? Because every one of these methods is precisely the method that the Jew prefers to have people try. He knows their futility first. They find it out later. He knows how these methods positively help him. They discover that later. The knowledge thus won would be pure gain were it not. It also seems to discourage the hope of men who know how seriously wrong the situation is.
You know, I think that's somewhat of a reference to the protocols. It just occurred to me just now as you were reading it, in saying that these methods, they know that these methods don't work, and they want us to use these methods. So that kind of brings up the way that what's being said in those protocols that
Of course, everything that's in the protocols is verifiable through other observation.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, I think that he's probably, that, you know, he's, that's his whole worldview kind of thing, you know. Like.
Besides this massive array of power, immovable as it appears, there is the veil cast over the Christian mind as to the supposedly peculiar destiny of God's chosen people. The Christian can't read his Bible except through Jewish spectacles, and therefore reads it wrong. The idea of the chosen people is one of the two great biblical ideas, but that the Jews constitute this chosen people is entirely opposed to the statement of the Bible. Even of the Bible which the Jews acknowledge, the Old Testament of the Christians. The blessings of world possession, world rule, superior population, commercial greatness, military power, constituted governments, quote, a great nation and a company of nations, close quote, all of these as means by which to spread light and healing among the nations, were truly promised to one people, to Israel, not to Judah. Judah's destiny was to be quite different. Very few Bible readers ever note the distinction between the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Yet this distinction was marked from the time of Jacob. The prophets absolutely insist upon it. Israel seceded from Judah, being unable to live with that people any longer.
See, I like the way he puts that. That made something very clear to me. So it's the people of Judah who are the ones we call, I don't know if this is correct either, according to the way they think, but Jews, they're the ones that were impossible to live with, and all the rest of them were the ones who went up north according to Christian identity and became Europeans, populated the European nations. And that's what he's saying here.
Israel's destiny took them out into the world, and if the Bible be true, then Israel's destiny of greatness is being fulfilled in Israel and not in Judah. The two houses are distinct to this day, although a future reunion, a spiritual reunion, is prophesied to come.
Oh, I've got in my mind it says it's promised to come, but in either case, I say, please, no, no, no. Now, that's what I don't like to hear. You know, that now he thinks that somehow there's going to be some union of these peoples. We're going to be reunited. You know, I will not go along with that.
Well, Peters used to say that, in his opinion, Germany was probably Judah.
Well, that's not right. Who used to say that?
Pete Peters.
Well, what is Pete?
Well, he was very entertaining.
I've never listened to them, but...
Here's a Christian
I've
identity.
I've never heard that. You know, other Christian identity have Germany being something else.
Yeah. He was one of the single-seed line
brothers.
Christian identity preachers. I'm not any kind of Christian, but I like listening to Pete Peters.
Oh, well, the most standardized, I guess, what most people are is in this dual-seed line.
I don't know that that's standard, but that's the Aryan Nations doctrine.
Yeah, well, I don't know. The only ones I ever hear about these days. Okay. Well, I like the simple way that this guy talks about it here, but I don't.
Yeah.
Some people think there always has to be a final reuniting of everything in the end. Otherwise, it's not of God or something, you know? I think that's where that comes from.
Well, see, this is a little more like British Israelism. You know, like Herbert R. Armstrong and the Worldwide Church of God, you know.
Okay. See, I don't know if I really the distinction, but I think it's that there was British Israel, and then it kind of morphed into what's called Christian identity. But he was, I think, it was Cameron who was in that, as far as I've been able to discover. Not Leibold particularly or anybody else, but Cameron. And he started with British Israel. I don't know if he just stayed with that or what. But he does a good job though of making it clear what this Israel is. Anyway, all right. I think I'm done for a while.
Yet the false idea that the Jews constitute all Israel has penetrated the Christian consciousness to an alarming extent, so that when the Jewish press insists, as it does every week, "We gave you your God, we gave you your Bible, we gave you your Christ," even Christian ministers cannot find an answer. The answer is that the Old Testament is 9/10 an Israelitish book, and not a Jewish book. Abraham was not a Jew. Isaac was not a Jew. Jacob was not a Jew. Moses was not a Jew. Joshua was not a Jew. Gideon was not a Jew. Samuel was not a Jew. Even Esther and Mordecai were not Jews, but Benjaminites.
No, that horrible Esther, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on. I have lots of prejudices against all these names.
Yeah.
All right.
The majority of the prophets were not Jews, but Israelites. Upon the coming of Judah into power in the persons of David and Solomon, the misrule was so great that Israel seceded, and the secession was sanctioned by the prophets. In the New Testament, Jesus Christ found his disciples in Galilee, far out of Judea. And of them there was but one, Judas, whose name indicates that he was a Jew. Saint Paul was of the tribe of Benjamin, the light tribe, which was left with Judah for a light. Not sure what that means.
Well, it means that the tribe of Benjamin continued to stay with Judah. And this was the reason.
To show them the way.
Yeah, yeah, you know. But, you know, they say when they talk about Queen Elizabeth and that her family, that they're traced back to the house of David. And David was a Judean. So they're... among the true Jews, then they mean by that not among
I doubt that that's true.
Israel.
You know, the Merovingian dynasty claimed to be descended from a sea monster.
Oh, well, there you go.
So you can't really put a lot of credibility in
this. I'm not putting credibility in. I'm just saying that this is what is said about, you read this fairly often about that royal family, that they trace back to the house of David, to King David. But that's the conspiracy theorist thing.
Yeah, I know. But there is a constant... But you know what? Prince Charles, I mean, he objected when, I think it was William was going to be circumcised, and somebody said that it was a tradition that the males of the royal family would be circumcised. He said, how old a tradition can that be?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we know the truth about that circumcision in that royal family. I would like to know for sure whether they're circumcised or not. Or if Charles actually did, because I've read that too, if Charles actually did stop it with William, and it was supposedly then they say that Princess Diana or, didn't want it done, but we don't know what happened unless he shows us. And now they got that new little Henry, and nobody knows for sure what happened to him. Supposedly the story again is that the mother didn't want it. Whatever her name is. She put her foot down. But that could just be talk.
Okay. But there is a constant patter of preaching. The Russellites make it the great theme that the Jews are to rule the world because it is so prophesied.
Russellites became the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
The amazing blindness. The amazing blindness with which Christians have regarded the open pages of their Bible is the only explanation of this sided teaching, which is confusing to the Christians and exceedingly dangerous to the Jews. In the Bible, Israel is the chosen people of blessing, and the time is announced when Judah shall walk to Israel and recognize them and become one with them. There is a chosen racial breed, a select seed, a superior strain of blood and soul in the world, but it is not Judah. One thing, therefore, that Christians can do as a contribution to the solution of the Jewish question is to read their Bibles carefully.
I'm not sure about that, but...
Well, insofar as Jews are relying on representation of the Bible, that would help. Just to check to see if it really says what they're claiming it says.
But you know, now there's all these different Bibles that imply different kind of things. And that's the Jews who are behind that that one Bible that...
The Scofield Bible.
Yeah, the Scofield Bible causes people to see things through the eyes of Christian Zionists. And when was that? That was after 1922, huh?
I think it was before.
Oh. Well, see, you have to be careful what Bible you read. And I don't know anymore what Bible is acceptable.
The Jewish question will be solved, and its solution will begin in the United States. But that does not mean that it will come as the result of a popular movement. Great changes do not occur that way. It makes little difference whether the mass of the people see this question or not. The mass of the people are not always called into such matters. Their work is to hold the world steady while the change takes place. But a sufficient number of qualified persons have seen the question to ensure that now the era of solution has set in. The timid, the soft literary men in pulpits, with whose ilk Jeremiah had a keen acquaintance, the false preachers of peace, peace, the hush brothers and sisters of every name, the shallow shouters for fairness, and all who are afraid of the truth in its surgical forms. These have no place in the healing of the hurt of these times. They are wedded to their softness.
Hear, hear. That's right.
nothing has been more shameful in the last 2 years than the spectacle of men bidding for the applause of bootleggers and gamblers and the lecherous masters of the modern stage and the sinister Kahila and the anti-Christian American Jewish Committee, because, forsooth, someone has fulfilled the duty to tell the truth. However, these things must always be, and the evil influences among the Jews have learned just what kind of help they may expect and from what kind of men.
People.
The Dearborn Independent has not been making a fight, fulfilling a duty to shed light on a matter crying for light. The Dearborn Independent, therefore, has never urged any individual or organization to join it in this work, nor has it charged with cowardice those who, for prudential or other reasons, have kept silent. Editors, especially, have been absolved. Not one of them was asked to lend his aid, although the files of this office hold thousands of written assurances from newspapermen all over the land and from all parts of the world, testifying to the truth of our statements. Organizations have been proposed for various purposes. Strong organizations have offered themselves as vehicles carrying out of any plan the Dearborn Independent might propose. But all such undertakings have been avoided, our belief being that simply to state the truth and let it work its own right will was sufficient at this time. And that belief and policy we have adhered.
What did you just do?
I don't know. Can you still hear me?
Not very well. You're kind of low, but there was a lot of static. You're creating static. Wow! God! Of course, I've got my earphones on, so it's terrible.
On cable.
You're too low. You're not loud enough now.
Okay, can you hear me all right?
A little better, yeah.
All right.
Okay.
But what shall we do is the... Okay, where did we end off here? But all such undertakings have been avoided, our belief being that simply to state the truth and let it work its own right will was sufficient at this time, and to that belief and policy we have adhered. But what shall we do is the constant question. How shall we balk this system which surrounds us and infects us? And infects so much of our economic life.
Our common life.
Our common life, excuse me. Hmm. Observe it. Identify it. Eschew it. That is more powerful than active opposition. Not sure about that.
Well, you know, I like that. Because he's saying stop joining in with it. That last part, eschew it, is what's important.
Yeah.
You have to understand what they're doing and then don't go along with it. So he goes into that more as we go on.
The clear eye of the man who sees and understands is something that even the evil powers of Jewry cannot endure. The evil powers of Jewry. But the most potent action any awakened person can take is this. To erect again our own moral landmarks, which the Oriental Jewish invasion has broken down. This would spell sheer doom to the whole evil system sponsored by the Jews. And this is the course which has never been tried. To go back to the principles which made our race great, the principles to which we have been recreant and therefore have fallen an easy prey. This is the only invincible course. It is an opposition which evil Jews cannot understand and cannot defeat.
Now, see, I would experiment, which is people. Now, that doesn't mean all white people are going to do it, of course, but people who are aware, should boycott the movies entirely. But they still go to movies. They still do all that stuff. And then they say, well, I'll be critical of it or something, but they don't want to miss it. And after that would come television. We shouldn't be in any of this, but people are addicted to this entertainment and they see this stuff advertised and they want to see it themselves. They want to see
That is frustrating when you show people that something is bad for them and they still want to,
Well, we even have some of our radio hosts who talk about what's on television on their radio, you know, pro-white radio shows. And then they say, well, and people say, well, what are you watching that stuff for? And they say, well, it's, you know, we need to watch a certain amount to see what they're doing. It's good to see what they're doing. Well, you know, we all know what they're doing, and it doesn't take long to know what they're doing. So it's better, in my view, not to. We don't need to talk about what they're doing. We need to get away from it totally and get into our own moral system. Yeah, you know, and it's hard. We've been so depraved, really, by all this stuff. And I like that. Well, I'm really getting into when they call it Oriental. You know, when you compare that which is considered Oriental, which is really not the Far East at all. It's more like the Middle East, isn't it?
What we call the Middle East today used to be called the Near East, and in academia, it's still called the Near East.
Okay. And then, you know, the West, you know, there's a big difference in it, particularly if you look into the past, you know, go back into the past, because we've been all mixed up with it nowadays. And then I thought a good example, I don't have time to talk about this, but, oh, look how late it is already, gosh. I'm going to just listen now.
In place of the way of doing business which Jewish dealers have introduced, let the businessmen of the country adopt the old way of the white man. When a man's word was as good as his bond, and when business was service and not exploitation. Let the men and women of the country learn how to buy. Let them learn how to test quality in fabric and food, instead of being dependent on tags. The merchandising practices of this country in the hands of ruthless exploiters have all but ruined honest merchants. Let any dweller in a great city recall the last 20 years, how the Christian merchants have been growing fewer and fewer. Why? Is it because the owners of Jewish department stores are better businessmen? No. The Jewish merchants began the practice of filling their store windows with goods that looked like the goods in reputable merchants' windows and sold them for a much lower price. The helpless public, no longer able to determine the quality of goods and guided solely by price tags, flocked to the Jews' store. The result is that one hears everywhere, in ordinary conversation, the complaint that everything is shoddy. Of course it is, and it will remain so until we educate people in the art of buying. That of itself will break down 3/4 of the abuses practiced in the commercial world today. Another contribution that can be made to the defeat of Jewish subversive influence is the examination of so-called liberal ideas, their source, their effect, their whole tendency. Men are thinking ideas today that poison them morally, socially, and economically. These ideas are as deliberately shot into society as poison gas was shot into the ranks of soldiers in France. Our mental hospitality has been grossly abused. The public mind made a sewer. The time has come for a custom barrier to be raised for the examination of imported ideas. Unrestricted immigration of ideas has been as bad for the American mentality as unrestricted immigration of people has been for American society. We have taken our amusements without thought of what was behind them in the way of deliberate intent to make us common and careless and coarse. We have read our newspapers, wholly innocent of the propaganda mixed with the news. We have even taken our religion in a Judaized form, without trouble to inquire whether it squared with the Bible, the textbook of our religion. We have read our novels and have failed to see serum the author was injecting along with his story. And all this has been possible because we have been asleep, enjoying, as we thought, a life which was swiftly being taken from us, and dreaming that the old principles still held sway. It is perfectly obvious that the cure for all this is to become awake, alert, to challenge the foreign influence, and to seek out again the principles which gave us our greatness. We have been weaned away from our natural leaders. We have been taught to look to those who cannot even speak our language and who do not hold our institutions dear. A people that turns from its own leaders, people whose leaders have been turned from the sacred responsibilities of the high office of leading, is in a precarious position and becomes an easy victim to confusion of soul. There is a dearth of voices in the land today. The prophets are dumb or are reading beautiful essays to the people. Suspicion has been sowed like darnel seed between classes of the same race. The people have been broken up, and the subversive Jewish influence supports the oligarchy of unserviceable wealth at one end of the social scale, while it stimulates the baser elements of industrial unrest at the other end. And the race thus rent asunder to its own undoing does not see this. Capital does not see, and labor does not see, that the leaders of chaos are alien in blood and soul. To keep American and Christian the school, the church, the legislature, the jury room, and the government is the most potent resistance that can be made to the evil influences which have been upon us and which this series of articles has partly uncovered. The strength of all subversive influence is in proportion as we cease to be what we ought to be. The evil influences surrounding this people can succeed only as they change this people into something less than it ought to be. Therefore, to go back to the old landmarks, whereby we made all the progress we ever made, is not only the part of wisdom, but the need of the hour. The school must be cleansed. The jury box must be kept inviolate. Trial by jury has almost disappeared in Jewish New York. The church must be un-Judaized and Christianized. The government must be Americanized. Let there be the utmost freedom of thought and speech, but let there also be, with it, a discrimination which will prevent the people being victimized by every spurious idea, every gold brick economic proposal which comes along. It needs only that men be awake to their better interests and to leave no place in their life for the practices which destroy the very foundations of confidence. Surely, it must be understood by this time that the Jews rule, not by reason of their brilliance or their money, but by ideas which are not even properly Jewish, but Babylonian. They have captured the castle from within. They have been able to do so only because of our ignorance of the lineage and dignity of the stock of ideas upon which our civilization has been founded. Our people needs to engraft itself again on the parent tree and draw again the sustenance which made it great and fruitful. Many so-called Gentiles are somewhat affected by the Jews' ills of persecution. This has been sufficiently discussed in previous articles, but Gentiles can further contribute to the solution of the Jewish question by looking about them to see if they can discover any evidence of persecution here, unless it be persecution of the Christians by the organized agencies of the Jews. In this month's Atlantic Monthly, a Jewish rabbi who undoubtedly knows better assumes that his race is a hated race. He rather enjoys the thought and accepts it as a distinctive honor. Our Gentile might also observe how untrue this is. How indeed in this mixture of nations the Jew gets off with less even of the harmless kind of racial animosity than any other foreign admixture. Above all, the Gentile, so-called, who in 90 cases out of every 100 is no Gentile at all, as the Jews may well admit, will do well to avoid fear. Nothing is more abject than the fear of the Jew, and nothing more disastrous to the Jew than the tactics he employs to sustain that fear. The Jewish subversive power has been powerful only for evil, and only where there was a disposition to evil. It has never yet succeeded in bringing shame or confusion to the right. Indeed, there is one sure way of gaining the respect of the Jew, and that is tell the truth.
Yeah, what he's saying is, you know, that the Jews respect you more truth about them than if you go along with their baloney.
Well, it shows that you're not afraid.
Yeah.
No one knows better than the Jew whether statements made about Jews are true or not. Gentiles may never be certain whether a statement made about the Jews may be relied upon, but Jews always know. That is why prejudice, abuse, hatred, scorn, ridicule, false charges roll off them as water off a duck. The Jews have never in all their history feared the lies of their enemies, but they have feared the truth. And if they only fear the truth in the ancient sense, not to be afraid of it, but to fear to violate it, and to fear to have the truth tested against them, then the day of Judah's return to standing has come. The truth is Judah's friend, and Israel's friend, and the world's friend. It makes hard demands. It is sometimes not easy to speak, and harder still to hear. But the truth heals, as Judah is due to discover. There is this to say, that among the many thousands of persons who have written to the Dearborn Independent, confirming, out of their own observation and experience, the statements made in this series of articles, there has been a most gratifying absence of the spirit of violence. At the beginning, a few rabid Jew-baiters made themselves known, and expressed their hope that at last a regular program of pogroms was to be instituted. We never knew how far these advances were made with knowledge of the Jewish leaders. But we do know that for a year and a half in this United States, the Jewish press and Jewish thugs and Jewish politicians and even some of the most respectable of the Jewish organizations did their utmost and in some of the strangest ways to compel this study of the Jewish question to lead into violence and disorder. There was nothing that the Jewish leaders were more desperately desired or more tirelessly worked for. That was their first setback. Everywhere else in the world, they had always been able to foment this sort of thing and label it anti-Semitism. The label anti-Semitism is one of the choicest weapons in the Jewish armory. But in the United States, their plan failed. It is their first notification that in this country, the question is going solved. It is not to be given a new lease of life by following the old mistakes. The Dearborn Independent knows the temper of the American people on this question, that it is cool, fair, and somewhat more determined than it formerly was. But the Jews know this temper better than anyone else, hence the magnitude and superb rashness of the propaganda with which they are literally flooding the country. The Dearborn Independent is grateful for the flood of Jewish propaganda. It has served in hundreds of important cases to give the confirmation to our statements, which was wanted. Jewish literature has been a powerful informer of the gravity of the Jewish question in the United States. The result was not what the Jewish leaders wished, of course, but it was serviceable to the truth, just the same. Now that the question is, now that the press is able to print Jew when necessary, now that a bunch of keys has been provided by which the people may unlock doors and make further inquiries, the Dearborn Independent will follow other aspects of the question, discussing them from time to time as circumstances may warrant.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Issue of 14 January 1922. So they just got into 1922 and that was the end.
I read that there were more than 80 articles in the series, actually. I think there were 96.
Yeah, but you know what I think? I think that they combined some things for the book. I don't think they left anything out. I haven't been able to find out any information about, you know, if there's more to this and it's not all put in the book, if they combined some things into one chapter,
I know that the Dearborn Independent did continue to publish some anti-Jewish articles for a few years, but not in this series.
Right, right. Yeah, it continued to publish until it was like 1927 or something. Well, we're going to go into that next week. So check up on everything you want to check up on, Hattie, and we'll talk about it. I don't know if 1 hour is going to be enough for all that there is to say about the background of this. But we did cover some in the beginning, but I think there's more. I've got more to say now. And, my last statement is I think that this shows that the people, quote, in quotes, are not ever able to live up to the requirements of democracy. And a more authoritarian system really is required to keep society in order. Well, good night, ladies and gentlemen, and come back next week tomorrow.
Rage, aches, rage on, breaking out drinks all night long.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.